All right, welcome everyone. Another episode, and we are going off the record with
Miguel Sisaon.
All right, welcome, Miguel. Glad to have you again on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We're gonna be talking about FIFA and some heavy stuff regarding the World Cup, since it's less than a month away, right?
Right. It starts on 20th November. So yeah, today's 25th of October. So for sure, yeah, less than a month.
All right. So off we go. What did you want to talk about? Because we had a little interview before the episode, and now obviously Miguel knows a lot more than me about this stuff, so he's going to be taking the wheel on this one.
No, so I think the most important thing about this episode is going to be understanding why the World Cup is being held in Qatar, how it was chosen, and what's the background behind it.
So what is usually the process? Because I think a country has to make some sort of an appeal to host the World Cup.
Yeah, that's right. Usually there are several countries who want to host the World Cup that tell to FIFA, look, we want to host the World Cup. And usually it's been decided 8 years in advance. So, for example, now it's going to be chosen. The 2030 World Cup will be chosen shortly. But in this case, it wasn't 8 years. It was 12 years. It was decided in 2010. So they're already... something wasn't really working on. And and then there's competition, and then FIFA votes for which is the best country to host the World Cup.
And the vote is established by, I assume, like some sort of board of directors, or is it...
Yeah, I mean, UEFA has certain votes, CONCACAF has certain votes. Mm-hmm. It depends on the football federation. Mm-hmm.
And there has been a lot of controversy going on regarding the work environment there in Qatar, and also the rescheduling of the World Cup. Because for those of you who are not that familiar, usually World Cups are held in summer.
Yeah. Usually it's at the end of the football season, which ends in May. Mm-hmm. And it would start in June and finish at first week of July.
Yeah, but in this case, it's starting in November.
First
time in history. That is some pretty heavy stuff. And a lot of people have been complaining about that as well, because usually it is one of the most, if not the most watched sports event. And having it held in summer gives the ability, because, I mean, like everyone is free during summer. Everyone's on holiday, so everyone can get the chance to support their countries. But, for example, having them held on November, especially the end of November, is kind of like a heavy period for students. It's an exam period and stuff like that. So could you walk us through, like, why was that a thing? What happened? Why? What's behind this controversy?
Oof, this one's going to be a long one, because there's a lot of controversy, a lot of context behind it, a lot of things to understand why it happens. And in this World Cup, what I find crazy is that politics got really involved. You know, politics, we know that it's something that's present in our lives, even if we don't know it.
Of course.
But this time it was really, really some heavy stuff. Some heavy stuff. So if you want, I can go through the whole things.
Of course.
Whole events that happened since 2010. So what I found out, first of all, is that there were many investigations done by many prestigious magazines, mm-hmm. like France Football, The Guardian as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not me saying it. I want to make this clear, mm-hmm. that this is an investigation made by many journalists and many experts. Mm-hmm. So when does this whole thing of the Qatar World Cup start? As I said before, it starts in 2010, specifically in November 2010. In the 23rd of November 2010, so almost exactly 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. What happened on this day? Well, according to an investigation made by France Football, there was a secret meeting held by four people. First one was Nicolas Sarkozy, mm-hmm. who was France's president at the time.
And
Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. I'm not sure if I pronounced the
close
name
enough,
well.
Close enough.
Who was the Prince of Qatar. Mm-hmm. The third member then was Michel Platini, who was UEFA's president, and he was French also, so that's very important to take.
Was he the one involved in the 2015 scandal?
The 2015 scandal is part of the Qatar. Qatar Gate.
We're connecting the dots.
It was found out in 2015. And then the fourth member was Sebastian Bazin, who was the president of PSG.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's four very important people who held a secret meeting in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they hold this meeting? Well, because there were very important ties between France and Qatar. Not in politics, but economically, because Qatar is a country that invests a lot of money in France.
Mm-hmm.
So, in this meeting, there was a pact made. The pact was that Platini, who was UEFA's president,
mm-hmm.
would vote for Qatar to host the World Cup. And in exchange, Qatar would invest more money in France, both in the country and in PSG. So, Qatar would buy PSG.
Hmm.
Who owns PSG today?
Just to give people an idea, it has been estimated that the total of Qatar's investment in, or Qatari investments in France have almost reached $20 billion.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Really crazy.
And we're going to find out some more crazy stuff because... So after this meeting, it seems like Platini, you know, he wasn't very, very sure about all this because, you know, it was close to corruption. It was mm-hmm. like buying votes, which obviously is illegal.
Yeah.
But finally, Sarkozy managed to convince Platini. And what happened exactly 1 year later, Qatar Investment Authority, which is the investment fund that controls all of Qatar's profit when it comes to petroleum and gas,
mm-hmm.
they bought 70% of PSG. You know, because on the 2nd of December 2010, UEFA voted for Qatar to hold the World Cup.
Mm.
So, you know, it all
links up. Yeah, that's where it all links up dots to get connected. Yeah.
And the thing that I find crazy is that in 2010, there were the two World Cups that were going to be decided. The 2018, mm-hmm. which was going to be held in Russia and was held in Russia, and the 2022, which was supposed to be held in the U.S. So, you know, the two most powerful countries were going to get a World Cup each.
Yeah.
And finally, the Qatar's money managed to take away the World Cup from a country like the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that gives you an idea.
Yeah.
And, well, for some people have been saying, I mean, what is, like, that should not be that much of a problem, but I think a lot of people don't understand how unfit the climate is for, especially during summer. Like, some people have no idea how extreme the temperatures can be in summer.
Yeah, no, I mean, temperatures in Qatar can go up to, what, 50 degrees Celsius, probably. So there are climate conditions that are impossible to play football. And even the World Cup is going to be held, it's going to happen in November, and there's still going to be air conditioning in the stadiums.
Yeah, so that gives you an idea. In Gulf countries in general, like the Emirates and Qatar, they have excruciating heat. Like, it's and I've been to the Emirates before, and if you go there in winter, people will be swimming. They don't have what people have an idea of, as, you know, as a winter. There is no winter there. And I think I've heard that there have been some casualties for
workers.
There
have been quite a lot of casualties.
Due to the extreme work conditions and working in this desert-level heat.
Yeah, no, that's right. Well, look, according to another investigation made by The Guardian, there have been more than 6,500 people dead.
Dang.
Most of them are illegal immigrants who have come mm-hmm. to Qatar from other countries like, I don't know, Pakistan or something like that.
Yeah.
And you know, what I find funny is that Qatar, the government of Qatar,
mm-hmm.
only recognizes 39 deaths.
Only 39 deaths?
Only 39, where compared to the 6,500
people estimated.
To put it into perspective, 6,500 workers died. That means 12 every week are dying because of the World Cup. 12 people every week is more than one person per day.
And no one bets an eye, of course. And like we're and talking, this is the same FIFA that have been supporting the fight for anti-racism. They're supporting Ukraine. This is the same FIFA we're talking about.
There's a lot of hypocrisy. There's a lot of hypocrisy going on. There's many things I don't understand. Because, for example, recently there was Joseph Blatter, who used to be the president of FIFA when the World Cup was decided back in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that it was a big mistake to choose Qatar as the host country.
Oh, you don't say.
but why do you come in 12 years later and you say, oh, it was a mistake?
Yeah.
What are you going to do with that?
Yeah, what's changing now? Yeah. I mean, you can just... Like, he's pulling a George Bush now, saying that I'm making such a money-hungry decision and that involves people's lives and then just casually mentioning it as a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, 6,500 lives, you know, that's a lot of families destroyed. Probably, just those poor people. They had no other choice than to build that infrastructure.
That's why they get these minorities. I mean,
yeah.
If you go to these Gulf countries, you will not see a worker that is a native from there. Most social workers, and we're talking like taxi drivers, we're talking shop attendants, most if not all of them are minorities. And they do that because they can abuse them as much as they want because they have no other choice but to accept whatever they get.
Exactly. And another important point is that there are so many casualties, not only because of the working conditions, of course, but because Qatar didn't have the necessary infrastructure to host a World Cup. You know, when a country hosts a World Cup, you need X amount of stadiums, of good quality stadiums, over 30,000 feet, hotels, etc., etc. If a country does not have the necessary infrastructure, you just cannot, you cannot host an event like the World Cup.
Yeah, Libya, for example, tried to host the World Cup during the Gaddafi era, but it simply did not have the requirements. So it's a completely natural thing. But we've seen corruption to a level where they don't care about that stuff, and all what they care about is like filling their pockets with money.
Yeah, like I don't know how many stadiums they have had to build for this World Cup, but is it really worth it building, I don't know, 8-10 stadiums in a very small country? Because in the end, Qatar is also a very small country, taking away so many lives.
Well, moving on from corruption to more corruption. Could you tell us more about the 2015 FIFA scandal? Because we've mentioned it, and I'm sure our audience is eager to know more about it.
Yeah, that's basically when the Swiss authorities, mm-hmm. they arrested, I think it was 7-8 FIFA members for corruption scandals,
mm-hmm.
regarding all sorts of money laundering. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, money laundering. Yeah,
money laundering. Etc. etc. And the two most important people inside this scandal were Sepp Blatter, who used to be FIFA's president.
Mm-hmm.
He was president for many years. I don't remember how many, but it was a lot of years. And also the before mentioned Platini, who was UEFA's president.
He was the president, I believe. 17 years?
17 years.
17 years, yeah. From 98 till 2015, till the scandal.
But these scandals happened ever since 1999, I think. So almost mm-hmm. for his whole presidency in front of FIFA.
Mm.
So yeah, these guys, they were suspended and sentenced to 8 years of suspension from all football-related activity. I think for Platini, maybe it was even a bit more.
Mm.
I think they didn't go to prison. I don't know why, but for some reason they ended up not going to prison, probably because they paid the...
Yeah, people like that don't really go to prison. And even their suspension, I mean, it would be naive to think that they still can't influence decisions,
yeah,
even though they're suspended.
No, yeah. They certainly can, especially, you know, when you've been in front of FIFA for 17 years, all the type mm-hmm. of contacts, the people you know,
mm-hmm.
Of course, you're still in front of FIFA. But Recently, I'll have to double check why, but in June of this year, of 2022, the Swiss federal authorities, because there was a judicial investigation made by the Public Ministry of Switzerland, they asked they said that Sepp Blatter and Platini should face at least a 2-year jail sentence.
Mm.
Because of all this corruption scandal, you know, it was even investigated by the FBI.
Wow. The way they caught them was kind of funny to me when I was reading about it. They were in a hotel in Zurich?
Yeah, they were in a hotel in Switzerland. The police just went in. And, you know, it was totally unexpected. Like, none of these members knew what was going on.
Yeah.
But obviously, they didn't take the big guys.
Obviously. No, you can never get them. You can never get them anyways. Well, I mean, moving on from these, heavy topics, we're kind of lighten up the mood a little bit. Some World Cup predictions. What are we thinking? We're going to go through each group from each country group, and we'll be making a little bit of predictions here. Let's see. Let's compare them in the near future. Let's see how well they do, shall we?
Yes, of course. I think it's going to be a very, you know, besides all the corruption and all the controversy behind this World Cup,
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be very, very interesting with very good matches, you know, putting aside all the problems they've had. And I'm really looking forward to it because I have, for example, high expectations for Spain. Everything that is not reaching the final is going to be bad. It's going to be bad. A bad World Cup because we have some very good players. But then it's true that there's many, many big teams.
Yeah.
Such as, for example, Argentina.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people are putting their money on Argentina.
Yeah, no, for example, I want Spain to win, but I think Argentina is going to win.
Yeah, so. bias aside. let's try to be a little bit factual.
Okay.
I mean, what are some talents? If you could tell some people some talents that we're looking forward to watching in Spain. Certainly not Morata, though.
In Spain, Morata, I have really nothing against him. But for example, Ansu Fati, I hope he's gonna do a good World Cup. Jeremy Pino, he's a striker for Spain. He plays at Villarreal. Mm-hmm. Very good young player. Of course, Pedri. And Gavi, who recently was the Golden Boy.
Yeah.
Got chosen Golden Boy last week, I think.
A lot of people have been comparing them to Xavi and Iniesta. How do you feel about
mistake,
that?
It's big a big mistake. Yeah. Comparing, like,
it's a little bit too ambitious.
We're never going to see something like Iniesta Xavi again.
Yeah. No, those are phenomenons, honestly.
Yeah, for I mean, Pedri and Gavi are very good, very good. Probably best top three duo in football right now. But still... They're never... I wish.
Yeah, but, we wish, honestly.
But I don't think they're going to reach Xavi and Iniesta's level. I mean, they've won everything that was possible.
Yeah, I mean, we hope that we see that level of football.
Oh, of course.
I'm honestly glad I was born in this, like, time period so that I could notice these phenomenons. Well, I mean, moving back to the World Cup, we got Group A. Who are we thinking? Group A is Ecuador, Netherlands, Qatar, and Senegal. We got a couple strong teams here. A
couple strong teams, yeah. But, for example, Qatar, you know, they're because they host the World Cup. This has nothing to do with corruption. It always happens. Okay, I want to make this clear. That every time there's a World Cup held in one country, that country is automatically qualified.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Qatar has the level to make it into the last... to the round of 16. But then, I don't know, Netherlands, I think for sure, they're going to be first of group. And then...
I'd say second is Senegal, don't you think?
I would say Senegal.
A lot of great talent have come out from Senegal.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Sadio Mane, for example.
Yeah, prime example.
Yeah.
Group B, primarily
Group
dominated.
B, there's going to be very good matches.
Really?
England, USA. I'm really looking forward to see if we're gonna call it soccer or football.
It'll be the battle for the name of football.
Yeah, exactly.
Iran, not really expecting much from them.
But for example, Wales, it's the first and probably last World Cup of Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
No, I mean, because of his age. So I'm very happy for him as well. And also England against Wales, you know, it's going to be like...
And I hope he'll leave a really good impression. Because honestly, he left Real Madrid with, I'd say, a really bad impression.
Yeah, but with Wales, it's not the same because Real...
He's on a different level when he plays.
Gareth Bale's flag, it was Wales, Golf, Madrid.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he first cared about Wales, then Golf, and then Madrid.
Yeah.
So with Wales, he's always going to give a good impression.
Group C, things get heated up a little bit.
Group C is incredible.
We have the, Group C, the star of the World Cup, Argentina.
Argentina, yeah, they have quite a bit of a tough group, I think, because Mexico in a World Cup, you never know. And then Poland with Robert Lewandowski.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they can win a game like that.
By the way, speaking of Lewandowski, a lot of people have been saying that his levels has kind of deteriorated when he came to Barcelona.
Yeah, many people say that, but they get... it always depends on the results. You know, if Barcelona wins, Lewandowski's the best. He's going to win Ballon d'Or next year.
Obviously.
If Barcelona loses, oh, he's old. He's not a football player for Barcelona. He has to retire. You know, that's the way football
works. But people have been saying that he doesn't really have the passion to play for Barcelona. Because one thing he said during an interview, he said that he would like to play in La Liga, like, his main objective is playing in La Liga, kind of like regardless what team. I mean, not to that extent, but a lot of people have been saying that he would have preferred to come to Real Madrid. But in Real Madrid, you have Benzema,
and he's not moving. This year was impossible.
He's not moving anywhere.
No.
And a lot of people have been saying like he's been getting kind of demotivated. On a personal opinion, what do you think of that?
Honestly, I think Lewandowski said on an interview that he wanted to play for Real Madrid like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But now, you know, the Barcelona opportunity arrived. And I think he does want to play for Barcelona because he did have to make a lot of effort to move from Bayern Munich to Barcelona.
Yeah.
I think his salary got lowered. Barcelona also made a big effort paying 50 million for his clause.
Yeah.
So I think he's really eager and looking forward to winning some titles with Barcelona.
Well, hopefully we see a stellar performance in the World Cup as well.
Yeah, the match I'm really looking forward in Group C is Argentina against Poland, because it's going to be like Messi against Lewandowski.
Oh, yeah.
Past against present of Barcelona.
The torch. I mean, it kind of got passed to... Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah, it depends how you treat Messi. He's been more of a winger, though, than a striker, you'd say.
Messi?
Yeah.
Yeah, Messi is. He can play anywhere.
Messi
could be a goalkeeper if he wanted to.
No, I'm a Real Madrid fan and I'm a Ronaldo fan, but Messi is Messi. You just can't. Group D.
It's the easiest group France could have gotten, in my opinion.
Keep in mind, France has the World Cup curse.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
The World Cup curse is against them. And for those of you who don't know, France obviously won the last World Cup, and we've never seen a national team win the World Cup and then do good in the next World Cup.
I mean, we have, but like in the 50s, 60s. You know, Pelé's Brazil, etc. But it's true that in the past years, I mean, if we look, for example, in 2006, Italy won the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, they got eliminated in the group stage.
Yeah.
And in 2010, Spain won the World Cup. 2014, they got eliminated. And same with Germany in 2018. So it's... We'll see. I think France has a very good team, too, because if you look at the group, Australia, Denmark, France, Tunisia.
Yeah, there's not really...
It would be very bad for France if they wouldn't get past to the round of 16.
I say Group E, that's where...
Group E is...
Los Enies, España.
I think it's the toughest group in the whole World Cup,
really?
To be honest. Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you look, Costa Rica, Germany, Japan, Spain. Germany and Spain are... top, like, world class.
We've seen different
teams.
Level of football when it comes to these countries.
I mean, Germany-Spain could be the World Cup final.
Oh, I wish. Oh, I wish.
So, like, yeah, to put into perspective how good the teams are. Then Japan. Japan doesn't have that many quality players, but they do defend very well. So it's going to be very hard to win a match against Japan, I think.
Yeah, they don't really have like star players that you would see on mainstream, but like in general, I've seen a lot of Japanese players in really good leagues.
Yeah, for sure. We cannot underestimate Japan. And then Costa Rica with some key players like, I don't know, Keylor Navas, for example.
Oh, yeah.
They've recently done very good World Cup, so they could surprise us also.
Right, Group F, we got your boy Modric, we got Croatia, we got Belgium, Canada, and Morocco.
Yeah, I think here the two favorites want to go to the round of 16, Belgium and Croatia.
Yeah.
The two European ones.
Because it's going to be a heated match.
It is.
That will be a really heated match. I'm looking forward for that.
Oh, definitely. Me too. And then Canada, I'm glad for them because they didn't make it to a World Cup since, I don't know, it's been like 20 or 30 years since they don't make it in a World Cup.
Yeah.
And Morocco, I don't know, I think they can do some good matches against Canada, maybe surprise one of the two matches against Belgium or Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be a good group as well.
We want group G. We've got Brazil.
Brazil, yeah, I think it's going to be the first of the group.
Yeah, I don't think there's any hope for the other countries, unfortunately. Yeah, no. If you get matched up in Brazil, I think Brazil, in my opinion, I think when you think of a World Cup, your mind would either go to Argentina or Brazil. They've definitely dominated before to a different level.
I mean, honestly, between Argentina and Brazil, I'd rather have Argentina because of two reasons. One, because Messi plays for Argentina. And number two, because, you know, Brazil already has 5 World Cups. Like, leave some for the rest. You know, if they win this one, it's going to be 6.
They're getting out of control.
Yeah.
Group H, we got El Bicho.
Group H is going to be a very good match, especially Portugal against Uruguay.
Yeah.
Because in Uruguay, there's some very good players, like Fede Valverde, who plays in Real Madrid.
Oh, yeah.
I honestly think he is a potential Ballon d'Or.
Valverde has been going off. I don't know what happened last summer. I don't know what they fed him. I don't know what kind of training he did.
But he's another player
completely. Valverde is a different human being. He's a specimen. I've seen the last games he's been playing. First of all, the man has an engine installed in his chest. He just doesn't get tired. He just runs to every ball, max speed. We've seen him defend. We've seen him in the midfield helping. We've seen him make crazy assists.
And crazy goals.
Like, we're talking like 2012, 2014 Ronaldo level assists, like lobbing the ball from the left wing, the right wing to the left wing, and vice versa. Also, his last game against... Real Madrid was against...
Elche, I think, no? Or
I think so. We'll confirm that in a second.
Yeah, no, I know the goal you're talking
about. He scored a rocket from outside. He's honestly...
But, and also against Barcelona, he scored another goal.
Yeah. I'm rooting for Valverde. I want to see him
I remember Ancelotti said on press conference, if Valverde doesn't score 10 goals, like at least 10 goals, that means I'm a very bad manager. And you know he's already scored like 7 or 8. And we're in October, so...
Which goes to show like how connected really the Real Madrid players are with Ancelotti. Like we've seen a different kind. We've seen a lot of Real Madrids. We've seen the iconic, unforgettable Jose Mourinho Real Madrid.
No, I think Jose Mourinho was the one to change the course of Real Madrid's history.
Oh yeah,
he is one to thank for all these Champions League they've won in the past years.
Yeah,
even if Mourinho didn't win one in Real Madrid.
Even for his like kind of like questionable style of managing the team, bro. The matches, Los Clásicos in the Mourinho era,
those were the best.
They were different. It was a death match.
I remember when there was a Clásico back in 2010, 2011.
Yeah,
you would hear about it in the media, like television,
exactly.
At university and school, everyone would be talking about it, but not the day before, like 2 weeks before.
Yeah,
people would already be talking. Oh, there's some Real Madrid, Barcelona coming up.
I remember at school we used to have fights.
Yeah.
At school we would fight 1 week before the game. We'd have people showing up with flags. The teachers would get mad. They're like, don't involve football in school. Like people really took it hard, and it kind of pained me when I was looking forward to this Clásico that happened. A lot of people, it just went over a lot of people's heads. It just happened.
No, it got very heated. I think at one point it got out of control. Because it's good to have, you know, this little rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I think 2011, I think it got out of control. Because in that year they played a Champions League semifinal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think that's where it got completely out of control.
Yeah, like for the people that don't know, we're talking like if someone falls, someone will just step on them.
But for real, like
I remember one time. Yeah, yeah, no, literally, they would literally step on them. I remember one time Real Madrid lost, and Mourinho just walks up to Guardiola, which is Barcelona's manager at the time, and
it was to Tito Villanova.
Oh yeah, yeah,
he was the second. Rest in peace, by the way, Tito Villanova. He was the second coach of Pep Guardiola, and he just put his finger in the eye.
Yeah, he just poked his eye after the game ended, and the chaos, and it was honestly unforgettable. It was a different type of football. Which gets me to say a question. A lot of people have been saying the English league is getting a lot. It's kind of like tracking back the attention it used to have. Because the competition is really, really high.
I mean, I agree and I disagree with that for several reasons. First of all, I agree because it's true that it's getting back the attention it used to have because of all the money the Premier League moves. You know, for example,
that is true.
Premier League teams, they earn much more money just for television rights, for example, than La Liga teams.
Mm.
And then when it comes to competition, I don't think the Premier League is that competitive as people think, because if you look at the past champions of the Premier League, it's been Manchester City and Manchester City last year, Liverpool in 2021, I think it was, and then Manchester City for a couple years. So you know, it's not like it used to be 5-10 years ago when you could have Leicester, you could have Chelsea, Manchester United. You know, these teams, they don't win the Premier League anymore. So it's between the Liverpool and Manchester City. It's true that this year,
especially City, because like last year was Manchester City, 2021 was Manchester City, 2019, 2018. Liverpool kind of like popped in the middle.
In the past 5 years, there's been two different champions. For example, in La Liga, in the past 5 years, there's been three different champions. So if you look at that stat, La Liga would be more competitive. But then it's true that what I was telling you, if you look at 5-10 years ago, it was more competitive.
Yeah, more diverse, kind of like that.
But it's true that this year we have to be careful with Arsenal. They are first in the Premier League. They haven't lost a single match, I believe.
Yeah.
So I wish they were going to win the Premier League, because it would be very good for the competition.
And Manchester City's streak was just stopped. I remember them being on a really high streak, but not anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
But a lot of people have been criticizing Manchester City. They're kind of like first of all, for their infinite budget.
But that happens with PSG as well.
Yeah.
State teams, as we call them here in Spain.
Yeah, so, they've got the, what was it, the Yaya Toure Champions League curse. I don't know if you know about it.
No, I don't.
Yeah, there's so, to give you more of a perspective, Yaya Toure was a player in Manchester City.
He used to be for Barcelona as well.
Yeah, and he had a fight with Pep Guardiola, and apparently, this is all gossip. It's not like nothing confirmed or anything. But apparently, he actually cursed him.
Really?
Yeah. Some people have been saying it's like metaphorically. Some people have been saying they've actually been cursed. But he actually cursed him to not win the Champions League. Yeah, I'll try to get more context on the story. Sure. Because, it's just...
But it's true that Guardiola has had very bad luck in the past years when it comes to the Champions League. Because if we look at last year, for example, against Real Madrid, how can we forget those two goals?
Madrid are cracked in the Champions
League.
By
Rodrigo.
They are on a different level when it comes to Champions League. Like, they would get, Madrid would get, like, would lose 3-0, 3-1 to Barcelona. And then just show up to the Champions League and just stomp everyone.
That's true. They have something. I don't know what it is. I have envy of them,
mm-hmm.
because I do not understand how they can win some matches, like the match against Manchester City last year, the match against PSG at Bernabeu as well. You know, it's just something that you cannot understand.
Yeah, and I just pulled up the quote from Yaya Toure's agent. He says, and I quote, "I am sure that many African shamans will not let Guardiola win the Champions League in future. It will be like an African curse on Guardiola. Time will tell if I am right or not."
Wow.
So, wow.
I didn't know that. What's actually being true for now?
A lot of like this kind of like magic stuff have been involved in football. I mean, I remember 2010, I think, there were a lot of like accusations of like Germany using black magic, whatever. It's some pretty crazy stuff. Personally, I don't really believe in that stuff. I don't really think
that. Me, for example, I believe. It's not that I believe, but I wouldn't like to have a curse on me. You know, because
no one would.
Internally, I would think, ah, shit, what if?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But no, I do believe in that type of destiny, because, for example, in 2010 World Cup,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember Pulpo Pol,
yeah.
The octopus.
Exactly. Was that. Like, I was referring to that. I forgot about it. Yeah, please like tell us more about
like
it.
Like a mascot. He wasn't really the mascot of the World Cup, but he was like this octopus.
Yeah.
That they would put two boxes inside his aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
One with, for example, let's say Spain's flag, and another one with Germany's flag if they were playing against.
Yeah.
They would put food inside both boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So then the octopus would decide which box to take the food from.
Yeah.
And depending on which box he was taking the food, that means that team would win.
Yeah.
And for example, for Spain, he chose Spain's box always, and Spain won the World Cup.
That's
so, you know, I don't know if it's coincidence. If it's
staged or
I want to believe that it's true, that he knew what was gonna happen.
Well, we need that octopus for a lot of stuff then. If only he would help us with crypto and stuff like that.
Yeah, a shame he died.
Like already. Put a couple of coins, a little or like a couple of stocks or a couple of companies.
But that's crazy, because it didn't happen ever since. Like in the 2014-2018 World Cup, we didn't see any animal like that.
Yeah. Or like any voodoo stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, one player has been standing out recently, Erling Haaland, the goal machine.
It's true that he's a goal machine, but I don't like the people that are comparing him to Messi and Cristiano already. Because I saw, like, you know, on social media and everything, I see like, oh, he's the new Cristiano, he's going to be top scorer of all time.
Yeah.
I saw a stat. I'd have to double check, but I think he has to score like 40 goals per year for 15 years until he reaches the amount of goals Cristiano has scored in professional football.
Hmm. So I think comparing these young prodigies to Messi and Ronaldo, I think it's really harmful for them.
It is.
In my opinion, I think the downfall of Mbappe, because he may have his supporters, but I do genuinely believe that he peaked.
Yeah, of course.
Unless there's some sort of mindset change happens, unless Ancelotti pulls up and gives him the rough training, the same training he gave to Vinicius. I don't know, they feed him the same thing they fed Federico Valverde.
Yeah.
But I do genuinely believe that Mbappe peaked. He let the fame get to him, he let the money get to him.
But I think that's also psychological. Because mm-hmm. when you say no to a team like Real Madrid, the pressure is enormous. Also, the pressure he had for staying at PSG was enormous.
I mean, even what was his name again? The French, I think the French Prime Minister asked him to stay.
Oh yeah, Macron.
Yeah, Macron asked him to to stay in the club.
I hate when politicians, you know, they get into football.
Like, it's kind of dirty. Like, what does that have to
like anything? You have inflation. You have much bigger problems to solve than exactly. Mbappe staying at PSG. You know,
and but like, you know the pressure. Qatari prince, I think he also invited him out, and like he asked him like three different times personally, please stay at PSG. Like, come on, bro.
But it's true that the pressure that these young players get is enormous. Like we were talking before, Pedri, Javi, comparing them to Iniesta, Xavi.
Yeah.
Haaland and Mbappe, comparing them to Messi, Cristiano. I think that Haaland and Mbappe are Haaland and Mbappe. They're not going to be Cristiano and Messi, you know.
Exactly.
For sure, I wish them, you know, the best, and I hope they score as many goals as they can. But I think it's still early to say, like, you know, they're going to be world-class, like, remembered for history.
Yeah. Personally, I think Erling Haaland's, like, the only place to go is up for him. Because observing him and observing his personality, I don't think he's the type that would get attracted to fame and all that stuff. No, he is a robot. I think like all what he cares about, even like if you judge his composure on the field, like looking at him and watching him, observing him, his main objective is to put the ball in the other team's net, whether he does it or someone else. I've seen him celebrate and like Bernardo Silva's goals and other players' goals as if they were his own.
Like he's that's very good.
Running, screaming, full force, happy because they scored.
That's good because football is a team sport.
Exactly. But you've got on the other case Mbappe. And Ronaldo's guilty of this as well, by the way. Even though I'm a Ronaldo fan, but I know, and this is one of the things I hate most about him, if someone else scores the goal, he doesn't celebrate it.
And for example, the other day he was on the bench. It was the 89th minute, and he left the stadium.
Oh yeah, for Manchester United. Yeah, and look at where that got him. He was training with the under 18 team.
Football is a team sport, you know. You have to be happy for your teammates.
It is,
and just hope the best for the team.
And another move that they didn't like because he didn't. Well, I mean, they say he privately congratulated Benzema, but publicly he didn't.
I don't know. The thing I don't like about Cristiano, especially for the past years, is that, for example, in the Ballon d'Or ceremony, if he's not going to win, he doesn't go.
He doesn't show up, which is really disrespectful.
Which is, I mean, people win there when you want it.
Exactly.
So why don't you go when other people win it?
Exactly. As I was saying... He didn't publicly congratulate Benzema, even though Benzema has actually, like, arguably sacrificed most of his career for Ronaldo.
That's true. I mean, Benzema started to peak once Cristiano left.
Yeah, granted, he wasn't the best when Ronaldo was playing. Like he messed up a lot of times.
Not even close. I mean, I remember. Real Madrid fans back in, 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
They wanted Benzema out of Real Madrid.
They wanted him dead.
because he didn't score any goals. He wasn't Cristiano.
Yeah.
So they just wanted him out. And now look at him.
And Madrid's play style was really like Ronaldo heavy, basically. The main idea was to enable Ronaldo as much as possible. Even though Benzema was the striker. And the striker's, role is to
score goals. That Real Madrid team was built around Cristiano.
Yeah.
You know, everyone had to, Messi for Barcelona. There were teams that played for one player.
But I don't think it's that extreme with Barcelona.
With Barcelona?
Because Messi's play style is, he does have his clutch moments where he just, casually dribbles five people.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's, as heavy as past to Ronaldo as it is to pass to Messi, personally speaking.
You think it's heavier?
With Ronaldo. Because we've seen, for example, Juventus. When Ronaldo moved to Juventus, they couldn't play with him.
Yeah.
And I think even... my memory is failing me here. I don't know who announced it, but someone did. And they announced that the reason why Ronaldo failed at Juventus, or Juventus failed with Ronaldo, however you see it, is because they could not really get the team to suddenly shift their focus to play around Ronaldo.
That's probably true, but it happened with Messi also in PSG last year.
Mm.
If you look at the stats of Messi,
Horrible season.
I mean, horrible Messi. Season, but he still managed to get 25 goals plus assists. Of course, compared to the 60 goals that he used to score before, it's nothing. But if you compare him to a normal striker, it's not a bad season.
But I mean, PSG have been. They've been. There's been a lot of heat, especially in the front side.
Yes, because they have too many superstars. I think they don't know how to manage.
We've seen that with Real Madrid. Actually, try to do this.
Yeah,
they try to have a team of superstars, and it like 9 times out of 10 it backfires.
Yeah, in the first era of Florentino Perez as president,
mm-hmm.
like from 2000. Yeah, from the year 2000 to 2006. You know, you had the best players in the moment playing for Real Madrid. You had Zidane, you had David Beckham, Figo, Ronaldo, Raul. They were the best, and probably top five players in the world, and they were the same playing for the they were all playing for the same team.
I think they were called Galacticos.
Yeah, the Galacticos. So in 5 years, from 2001 to 2006, they won one Champions League.
Wow.
You know, so it didn't really work out. And Florentino had to quit.
Yeah, resign.
He had to resign in 2006, I think it was. And then came back in 2009.
Yeah, which goes to show, the football is more about finding talent and harnessing it rather than buying it.
Of course, I mean, look at Real Madrid, how they won the past Champions League. Modric, when Madrid bought Modric, he was no one.
Yeah.
And people were asking, who is Modric? Why do we want him? Why do we need him?
Yeah.
Same thing with Valverde.
Yeah.
Same thing. Toni Kroos, no, because he did a very
Toni Kroos already had like a reputable career.
But many, Keylor Navas as well, you know, he wasn't a top goalkeeper. There's many players that no one knew about them, and then Florentino Perez.
I think
Rodrigo, Vinicius.
Vinicius, yeah, all of these are young talents.
Benzema used to play for Olympique de Lyon.
Yeah.
And he was not that known, you know, back at the time. And now look at him. For example, Modric and Benzema, they both won Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
And no one wanted them at first.
Of course. Barcelona kind of tried to do the same, like going for a superstar squad. But it kind of backfired on them, and we've seen a horrible era for Barcelona.
Barcelona, they did very good in the Guardiola's era. Yeah. Guardiola's era, when they brought players up from La Masia.
Yeah.
Which is like the... how do you call it?
Like the juvenile team. No,
the academy.
Yeah, the academy. The younger than 18 team.
Exactly. And, you know, they brought players like Busquets, Xavi, Iniesta, Messi, Piqué, Puyol. It was crazy. But then when that era ended, President Bartomeu, I don't know what he tried to do, but he started paying 140 million for Dembélé, 120 for Coutinho. You know, players which are good, but they were not superstars either.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, they tried to play that game as well.
Yeah.
But they didn't manage.
And inflation in football has also been a thing. Like, comparing prices, back then, I think the first plus 100 million deal was Gareth Bale.
That's true. So. Back in 2013, I think it was.
And it was crazy. Biggest news. It was the biggest news. Like, everyone was talking about it. 100 million euros for one player.
And imagine now, Neymar costed 222 million.
It's insane.
Mbappe 180.
Mbappe, like, they're giving him government balance, but
like
a country's balance is just like deposited in his account just for playing. I think inflation in football is really ruining it. But
that happens because of all the teams owned by states.
Exactly.
Like City,
like
Chelsea before, like PSG. You know, when they have no spending limit, that's what happens.
PSG
is gonna, if there's a new superstar in Barcelona, boom, they're gonna pay 500 million if necessary.
And we've seen them do it kind of like to mess with Real Madrid. Like if Madrid are going for a certain player, PSG would just show up and they put like three times bigger offer.
Yeah, no, I remember, for example, in the Mbappe case, I'll have to double check the numbers because I saw them yesterday.
Yeah.
But, you know, he signed for 3 more years. And I think the total amount of money he's going to earn adds up to like 600 million euros.
Yeah. If you're talking about his deal with PSG.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like... I think like a 300 million euros sign-up bonus. And
yeah,
like,
because it was like the sign-up bonus, the actual salary, and then the...
Salary is insane as well. Like one.
Yeah, but I don't know how Web and FIFA can accept that.
I believe honestly, there should be some kind of moderation. I've always been more for freedom in business. Like I'm kind of like lean more towards the right when it comes to business. But in this case, I do believe there should be a little bit of moderation, because it's getting out of hand.
Because it's not fair. Because, for example, Real Madrid, he spends the money that generates through football activity.
Exactly.
PSG does not do that.
So it's regardless how popular exactly. and how successful the club is.
It should be regarding to how much you generate.
Stay tuned for Newcastle. Newcastle is owned by the Saudi Arabian exactly. royal family. We're talking like $400 billion, and that's only what they announced.
That's only what they
announced. That's only what they announced. It's like Newcastle is running on infinite money right now.
But I don't know if they're gonna bring good players, because it doesn't really have a name.
I mean, if they invest so much, I think it will be slow. I don't think it will be like one season and then suddenly you've got all the big names
but
in Newcastle.
We'll see, maybe in 10 years time it's the new Manchester perhaps. City.
Yeah, perhaps. Who knows?
Only time will tell.
I mean, Manchester City fans are probably gonna hate this, but
that's true.
But before the before the balance shift, let's call it like that, Manchester City was not doing the same as it is doing right now.
Manchester City, I mean, if we are objective, 10 years ago, almost no one knew about Manchester City.
When Manchester you say Manchester, it was Manchester United. Yeah, City fans are fuming right now.
No, but it's true. Like, what did Manchester City, what did they win before Abu Dhabi came in?
Yeah, a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it has been an interesting talk. I'm actually really looking forward for this World Cup. I think all of us are. It was great having you, Mian. And we're going to see more of you, of course, in the future.
I hope so.
Thank you so much for tuning in and watching. And it's been your boy DB signing off.